Just want to begin by saying how fantastic it is for us to be back here in Leeds among you all. We really appreciate seeing so many people that we've known for many years and seeing new people here as well. It's a tremendous privilege for us to be back here among you all. The 19 years that we spent here in Leeds were absolutely wonderful for us and a tremendous blessing. As I mentioned earlier, I've been retired now for 3 years. And when Judy and I first arrived in Sheffield as a retired couple, we knew nobody in Sheffield apart from my daughter Nicola and her family. So in order to try and get to know people, we decided that the best thing we could do would be to join the local golf club. And the golf club that we joined was absolutely fantastic because you could turn up on a Tuesday or Thursday, you would throw your name into a hat, your name would then be drawn out, and you would just play with whoever you got drawn to play with. And this meant that over the first few weeks, we played with completely different people every time. And during the course of a round of golf, there was one question that always got asked. And the question was this: Dave, what did you do before you retired? And when I said that I used to be a Baptist minister, this produced one of two quite interesting responses. The first one was for the person to say, "Oh, that's interesting. We used to have a vicar who was a member of the golf club, and actually, he was a really nice bloke." As if being a clergyman and a really nice bloke is an unlikely combination. The second response that I used to get when I said this was, "Oh no, a retired vicar. Oh, I hope I haven't been swearing too much." Again, as if the only thing that a clergyman cares about in a person is whether they swear or not. Now actually, this experience of being part of the golf club was really, really important to me, because as you will know, for the previous 40 years, I had almost been completely immersed in church life. I was what I suppose some people would perhaps rather rudely call a professional Christian. And I always felt that you were the people who were at the front line of witness and faith, and my job really was to kind of be behind the lines and to try and equip you for what you were doing in the places where it really mattered. But now at the golf club, I'm on the front line. I have to try and witness to Christ in a context in which the vast majority of people who are there have no real interest in the Christian faith. Now, interestingly enough, the title I was given for this chapter on Ruth is Life on the Outside. And that really sums up my last 3 years. I am, of course, still involved in church life. I take services, I preach. But now, like you, the vast majority of my time is spent outside the church. And in that context, I find Ruth 1, verse 1 really helpful. Ruth 1 verse 1 says this: "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab." So the story begins outside Jerusalem, away from Bethlehem, outside of the security and the familiarity of what the people of the day regarded as being the sphere of the kingdom of God. We find ourselves now in Moab, in a rather strange place, unfamiliar surroundings, a challenging place to be. And so looking at this chapter, the first point I want to make, you'll be really pleased I've got 3 points. Yes! The first point I want to make is to look at the challenges that people face in verses 1 to 7. And one of the things that I've noticed when I play golf with people, you're actually with them for 3.5, 4 hours. And during the course of that time, when you're playing a round of golf, people quite often share things. And they talk about some of the things that are on their hearts and the things that worry them And in talking to people, I have seen that the situation that was faced by Naomi and her family is actually very, very relevant to the challenges that people face today. And it seems to me that here in verses 1 to 7, again, you'll be pleased now I've got three, there are three particular challenges that the people face. The first is the challenge of national unrest. The book of Ruth begins with the words, "In the days when the judges ruled." Now, these words enable us to pinpoint the date of Ruth really quite accurately as being somewhere around the 12th century BC. In Ruth chapter 4, verses 21 and 22, we are then told that Ruth and her husband Boaz were the great-grandparents of King David. This means that the story of Ruth probably coincides with the period when Samuel, that great prophet, was just a small boy. This likelihood is strengthened by the fact that a Jewish historian called Josephus maintained that Ruth lived at the time of Eli. You remember Eli? He was the high priest when Samuel as a little boy was sent to live with him. Now, this particular period of Israel's history was a time of great national upheaval and unrest. There was jealousy among the various tribes of the nation of Israel, resulting in local skirmishes. There was oppression from foreign powers, particularly from the Philistines. There was idolatry and evil and greed within the religious life of the people. Naomi and her family found themselves living at a time of great national upheaval and unrest. Secondly, they faced the challenge of personal tragedy. One of the people that I have played golf with is a retired policeman. And he told me in the course of the round I played with him that in 1989, he was a young constable at Hillsborough Football Ground when 98 football fans died. And this tragic experience that he faced all those years before still lives with him and still haunts him. Naomi had two sons who were called Mahlon and Chilion. The name Mahlon means sickly, and the name Chilion means wasting. Presumably they were given these names because even from birth they were seen to be fragile and in poor health. Naomi's husband then dies, and she is left in a foreign country with two frail boys. Both boys get married, but before they could have any children, both of them died. The stark brevity of verse 5 highlights the tragedy of this woman Naomi's life. It says, "And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband." And so we find this woman facing immense personal sorrow. But not only did the deaths of these three men cause her sorrow, they also led to the third challenge that Naomi faced, which was the challenge of economic uncertainty. One commentator writing about Naomi's situation has written these words, "The situation of a widow, too old to have children, was a desperate one. Apart from selling her property, she had to rely on charity." My guess is that Naomi had no property. Famine had forced her to flee from her home. She was a refugee facing a hopeless situation. And we can fully understand why in verse 20 she changed her name from Naomi, a name which means pleasant, to Mara, which means bitter. Now the truth is that we, like them, don't we? We live in a world that faces those same challenges. We know, don't we, that we ourselves are living in a time of national uncertainty. What will Brexit mean for the future? What kind of Prime Minister is Theresa May going to be? Are we going to see an increase in racial hatred and tension? What will the Labour Party leadership battle result in? What threat does ISIS pose to us and to our children? A time of national uncertainty. We know too that we are not immune from personal tragedy. which can suddenly come upon us or upon people we work with or those who we love and care about. And we are aware too that economic uncertainty is very much a feature of our society today. These are the realities within which our faith has to operate. And it leads me to the second point I want to make, which is to see the challenge to faith in verses 8 to 15. During the time when he was dying of cancer, David Watson, who was a very famous Anglican preacher and evangelist, wrote a book. The book catalogued his battle with cancer, and it was called Fear No Evil. And in this book, he tells how two men, both of whom had faced a particularly severe tragedy in the loss of their children, came to see him. One of them had been a Christian, but was now an atheist, because he couldn't believe that a good God would allow such things to happen to him. The other had been an agnostic, but was now a Christian, because he could see how God was with him in the pain. And David Watson, who himself, as he died of cancer, was facing a severe test of his own faith, commented in the book that suffering and pain always challenge what we believe. And you see this very clearly in Ruth chapter 1. Now we need to understand, as we look at this passage, that Naomi's two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, were both Moabite women. Now the Moabite people, you may know, certainly had a very inauspicious start. Their beginning is recorded in Genesis 19, verses 36 and 37, when Lot entered into an incestuous relationship with his eldest daughter. The people of Moab owed their origins to a sordid and drunken event that took place in a cave outside Sodom and Gomorrah. If the start of the Moabite people was bad, things did not improve greatly over the years. The god of Moab was called Chemosh, and the worship of this particular god involved the sacrifice of children. Recognizing this background, then, we have these three women. They are facing the challenges of national upheaval, personal tragedy, and economic uncertainty. Two of the women are from Moab, Ruth and Orpah, and one of them is from Judah, Naomi. How will they respond to the challenge that they face? Interestingly enough, Naomi's advice to her daughters-in-law is that they should return to their former lives, and her logic is absolutely impeccable. She, Naomi, is not going to find another husband. And even if she did find a husband, and even if at her age, which is highly unlikely, she was blessed with children, would these two young women wait all those years until her boys had grown up so that the family line could be continued through marrying them? It was nonsense. The best bet is to go back. And Orpah does that. Verse 15, look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. Part of Naomi's reasoning was the feeling expressed in verse 13, where she says, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me. Now, it's not difficult to understand why she would feel that somehow God had let her down. God was responsible for the things that had happened to her, and her daughters-in-law would be far better returning to the familiarity of what they had known in the past, of their upbringing and their early faith in this god, Chemosh. Now, you know as well as I do that maintaining a deep and vibrant faith in the midst of all that is happening around us is not an easy thing to do. There are no simple answers, are there, to some of the deep questions of life. And we cannot brush over the terrible things that happen to people as if they were unimportant. And it is not good enough, is it, to stand in judgment over people who are struggling with what they believe. And the challenges that people face in the world today are not to be ignored and regarded as being glib and stupid, unhelpful answers given to them. So how do we respond to these challenges of faith? Ruth begins to help us just start to see a way forward. And so the last point I want to make is to see Ruth's unstinting love and faithfulness in verses 16 to 22. Judy and I have just returned from a holiday that included a week in the Lake District. And while we were there, we decided, despite our age, that we would walk up one of the highest mountains in the Lake District, which is called Beaufell. And the route that we took up Beaufell is called the Band. And it's a very steep path which goes up and up and up for about 2 miles and rises something like 800 meters in those 2 miles. And we were staggering up with our poles up this Band when we noticed a little girl of about 8 or 9 going up with her mother. And we got to a fairly flat bit on the walk, and suddenly this little girl started to do cartwheels. It was extraordinary. We just could not match her joyful exuberance. For us, it was grim determination. 1 foot in front of the next, and we will get to the top, or we will die in the attempt. And in the closing verses of this chapter, we see something of what I think is the grim determination of Ruth, who in verses 16 to 17 says to this elderly woman, Naomi, that where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. Now we need to recognize that for Ruth, saying those words involves sacrificing everything. She lost her family, her native religion, all the guarantees she could hope to have of protection, the hope of being buried amongst her own people that was so important in that day. She quite literally burned her boats, and she did so for God and for an elderly destitute woman who had nothing to offer her in return. It is a wonderful example of commitment both to God and to God's people. And it must have made a massive difference to Naomi in everything that she was facing. There are times, aren't there, in our lives when we don't want clever answers. And we don't need explanations. What we actually want is friendship and support. And one of the greatest things that we can offer to each other in the struggles that we all face in the world is Ruth's kind of unstinting love and faithfulness. We need to know that here, among the people of God, we will be encouraged, strengthened, loved, and supported in a non-judgmental kind of way. We need to know that here, in this place, we can be strengthened and enabled. It's also true that, like us going up Beaufell, there are times in our Christian walk when we will not be doing joyful cartwheels. But actually what we will be doing is putting 1 foot in front of the other with a determination that we will go on. And we will grit our teeth and seek to be faithful despite the pain, despite the questions, that we will be determined to go through it. In Hebrews 13, verses 12 to 13, we have these remarkable and I think absolutely wonderful words about Jesus. It says this: so Jesus also suffered outside the city gate, to make the people holy through his blood. Let us then go to him outside the camp, bearing the disgrace that he bore. We've already shared communion this morning, haven't we? And it's worth reminding ourselves that like Ruth and Naomi and Orpah, Jesus found himself on the outside. He gave his life for us outside the city. And he understands what life is like on the outside. He appreciates the challenge that we face and the way in which our faith is tested. And yet Jesus showed resolute determination and undying faithfulness and love that can inspire and encourage us. As I pray that we have sought to know and experience the presence of Jesus here in this place, I also pray that we'll know his presence on the outside. When we are the only Christian in the office, or the school, the leisure centre, among our family, or wherever we may be, may we face the challenge that this offers to us, and do so with faith and assurance, and may we know too the loving support and strength of our commitment to God and his people, but also of their commitment to us.